Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, June 5th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemire.
And this is Ndimiake Mokalielie in Washington.
Here are our top stories this evening.
First Lady Grace Mugabe's son, Russell Goreraza, has been found guilty of killing a pedestrian.
The name of the deceased has not been disclosed, and we think that the sentence is too lenient.
Deposed ZANU-PF Harare Provincial Chairman Jim Kunaka says he has not yet lost his property after it was attacked by the deputy sheriff on Wednesday.
No property was attacked by the deputy sheriff, but it's only the papers that have said to me, advising me that I have to settle the bill up to the 8th of this month.
And U.S. political activists urge U.S. President Barack Obama's government to monitor the situation in Zimbabwe, saying their fears that the nation might degenerate into chaos.
First Lady Grace Mugabe's son, Russell Goreraza, was today found guilty of killing a pedestrian a few months ago. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Russell Goreraza, the son of Mrs. Mugabe and her first husband, former Air Force of Zimbabwe Intelligence Officer Wing Commander Stanley Goreraza, was arraigned before a Harare magistrate today to face charges of culpable homicide. Prosecutor Venenzia Mutake told the court that on February 23 this year, Russell was driving his BMW vehicle registration number ACO0266 along Samora Machel Avenue in Harare Central Business District when he knocked down an unidentified pedestrian who died on the spot. The state attorney said the first lady's 31-year-old son was overspeeding, resulting in him failing to apply emergency brakes to avoid the accident. Goreraza, who spent a night at Roseville Police Station, pleaded guilty to the charge and immediately apologized for causing the death of the unidentified pedestrian. Magistrate Vakai Chikwekwe then ordered Goreraza to pay a fine of $800 or alternatively spend 2 months in jail. The magistrate said he was lenient on the accused person because he was never convicted before, adding that he was the custodian of his minor child following his divorce with his wife. After the magistrate gave his ruling, Goreraza rose again to apologize for the unidentified person's death. Coalition Against Corruption Director Terry Mutswanga said the non-disclosure of the deceased person's identity in court is suspicious.
I think the judicial system has been compromised given the magnitude of the case. The name of the deceased has not been disclosed, and we think that the sentence is too lenient.
Mutswanga said this puts a dent on the first family's image.
Obviously, the image has been dented. If it was something that was done in a transparent manner, the name of the deceased was supposed to be said in court.
This is almost the first time in the history of culpable homicide cases that a deceased person under such road accidents has not been identified. Police spokesperson Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba was not reachable for comment. Russell Goreraza made headlines recently when he was allegedly refusing to pay workers at his Toro's gold mine in Kadoma. He also made headlines for the wrong reasons when he was involved in several violent incidents at drinking joints. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, ZANU-PF has again suspended 39 members believed to be linked to a faction of the party allegedly led by ousted former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, who was accused by the ruling party of allegedly planning to topple President Robert Mugabe last December. The suspended members include former Information Minister Webster Shamu and his colleague Sylvester Nguni of Mashonaland West, former Environment Minister Andrew Langa, and several others. This follows the recent suspension of other senior party officials allegedly also linked to Mrs. Mujuru.
A Deposed ZANU-PF Harare Provincial Chairman Jim Kunaka says he has not yet lost his property after it was attacked by the deputy sheriff on Wednesday to cover a $4,000 default court judgment made last year. Kunaka says the deputy sheriff only served him with papers informing him to have the default judgment settled by next Monday, failure of which his property will be attached and auctioned. Kunaka, who is denying ever seeing the initial court papers summoning him to appear in court, says he instructed his lawyers today to file papers challenging the High Court decision.
No property was attached by the deputy sheriff, but it's only the papers that they served me, advising me that I have to settle the bill up to the 8th of this month. But what I have done so far, I've instructed my lawyers to go and file some papers to High Court to reverse the judgment that was given, because it was given during my absence. I was not given my time to defend myself. I did not even summon to appear to the court. So I was shocked to see those papers coming to my place where I'm living right now, claiming to come and collect my goods.
Do you deny assaulting the complainant?
Yes, I do. I did not assault the complainant. Why did he not report to the police? Since 2008, he only lashes to the small claims court to claim that I have to compensate him. And there is no medical affidavit in those papers that he is claiming to be I suffered some injuries, but no medical affidavit in the papers that have been given day before yesterday. Nothing is there.
That was former ZANU-PF Youth Chairman for Harare Province, Jim Kunaka, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Kunaka, who was linked to the notorious Chipangano gang in Mbare high-density suburb, was found guilty by the High Court of assaulting MDC member Prince Jack in 2008. The deputy sheriff was not reachable for comment.
United States President Barack Obama's government that recently dispatched a high-level State Department delegation to Harare is now being urged to monitor the situation there as there are fears that the nation might degenerate into chaos. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reports.
In an article titled Ominous Warning Signs Resurface in Zimbabwe, which appeared in a foreign policy magazine co-authored by Jeff Smith of Robert F. Kennedy Center for Human Rights and Todd Moss of the Center for Global Development, the two argue that, quote, the Obama administration will need to keep a keen and close eye on the ongoing events in Zimbabwe, including tasking the intelligence services for an assessment of the potential for mass violence. They add that this should include elevating the issue of Zimbabwe to the President's Atrocities Prevention Board, which can readily address the early warning indicators of mass atrocities.
So the Obama administration has made preventing mass killing a priority of the administration. So they created a special board within the government to try to identify potential mass killings and try to take steps to prevent them before they happen.
The two argue that, quote, over the course of the past few months, we have witnessed an ominous series of warning signs, bitter political infighting within the country's ruling party, the worsening of already deplorable economic conditions, the abduction and disappearance of a prominent human rights activist, and a surge of inflammatory rhetoric and political violence. Smith further says there are no signs the situation will improve.
Zimbabwe's history is replete with examples of these sorts of abductions and human rights abuses. And we've certainly seen it recently all through April and in May in Hurunguay West, for instance, with the upcoming by-elections. And many of these assaults are happening in full view of the police who have not intervened. So I think taken together, all these instances should be cause for concern.
Moss concurs, adding that though there are many crises unfolding in many parts of the world, Harare must remain a top priority.
There's no reason that the U.S. government can't pay attention into Syria and Burundi and other countries, and also keep an eye on potential problems in a place like Zimbabwe.
In a recent exclusive interview with Studio 7, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Africa, Dr. Shannon Smith, said Washington is keeping Zimbabwe on its radar.
Zimbabwe is not falling off the radar. It does matter. It matters to people in Southern Africa. It matters to people here.
But on the question of possible intervention in Harare and a possibility of chaos, Smith said Zimbabweans must control their destiny.
The future of Zimbabwe is in its own hands, clearly. Every country has processes in place to deal with those kind of questions. That our emphasis is on the importance of adhering to the rule of law in such processes.
Opposition political parties that have been warring recently are uniting to warn of a deteriorating situation in Harare. Opposition Movement for Democratic Change leader Morgan Tsvangirai says Zimbabwe is on the verge of disaster.
I can tell you that in their preoccupation with intra-political fights, no one is paying attention to the erosion of the economic well-being of the people. And eventually, people cannot just watch. And that's the most dangerous thing. It will cause instability in the country.
At the same time, the MDC Renewal Team Secretary General, Tendai Biti, says the ruling ZANU-PF has no clue in addressing the national issues, making the situation even more explosive.
Clearly, we are ripe for an implosion. And naturally, the African Union and all responsible authorities must watch Zimbabwe very closely, because all the ingredients that were in Rwanda in 1994 are in Zimbabwe at the present moment. Hate speech and hatred, toxicity. 2, absence of opportunities. 3, a huge army of unemployed people and social crisis. 4, a leadership vacuum. Our president is now an occasional visitor to Zimbabwe. Cabinet had limits. All these things create a shaky background. So my colleagues told the JF are definitely spot on.
Legal expert David Coulthard of the MDC formation led by Washman Ngube echoes Biti's sentiments.
Part of the problem is that there's a terrible political vacuum in the country. If you have a combination of a political vacuum and a country which is rudderless, with people controlling weapons within the country who have a history of violence, then you have a recipe for a very serious situation in any country.
Smith and Moss also argue that, quote, just as important, authorities in the capital, Harare, must know that the world is watching. But ZANU-PF Politburo member Munyaradzi Paul Mangwana says Zimbabwe is a sovereign state and is stable, and there is no need for foreign intervention.
That has always been their wish, that if they put us under sanctions, then the economy will melt down, and then the people rise up against their government. Unfortunately, that will remain wishful thinking. The people of Zimbabwe support their government. They know that the Americans are the enemies of Zimbabwe. And the Zimbabwean government is in total control of this country.
Political temperatures have been on the rise in Harare, owing to unemployment, which is estimated to be nearing 90%, though the government officially puts it at 10%. The recent threats that government will forcibly evict an estimated 5.5 million vendors from the streets by Monday has also stoked tensions in the country. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, this is Blessing Zulu.
In a related development, a delegation of member companies from the Corporate Council on Africa, or CCA, a non-profit organization which promotes business and investment between the United States and African states, is in Zimbabwe looking for business opportunities. Our reporter there, Thomas Chiripasi, reports.
The visiting U.S. business delegation met several government officials, including Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and representatives of the private sector. The head of the 7-member Corporate Council on Trade delegation, Philip De Leon, said Zimbabwe should adhere to the rule of law if investors were to seed their money in the country's various sectors of the economy.
Rule of law is important and predictability. My approach to coming to a country is having a clear understanding of the legal environment, and as any investor, making sure that it is predictable, foreseeable, and stable over time.
De Leon added that Harare also urgently needed to review its indigenization policy.
We've had interesting conversation, notably on the 51% rule, on indigenous rules, and so we've got some clarification which enable us to better understand the situation. And I think the more we ask questions, the more we can get clarification. And our question also enable you to maybe sometime fine-tune the message, because sometimes, you know, laws are not always clear, or you adopt a new law and it contradicts a previous one. So I think clear understanding of what the legislative environment is really critical, because some of us, as I said, are in mining. Well, you know, when you go into mining, it's hundreds of millions of dollars in investment. You're not going to go into a country where the environment is not very clear. So I think that's maybe not an issue, but something to look at and something we will look at to do further business.
Zimbabwe's Black Economic Empowerment Program compels foreign-owned businesses operating in the country to transfer majority stakes to indigenous people. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up, former miners struggle to make ends meet.
And what happens next in Zimbabwe after the resignation of FIFA boss Sepp Blatter? Stay tuned. But first, a look at regional and international news.
Iraq officials say Tariq Aziz, long the face of the regime of former leader Saddam Hussein, has died at age 79.
The U.S. economy gained 280,000 jobs in May, while the unemployment rate rose slightly to 5.5% as more people began searching for jobs.
And officials in Nigeria say more than 30 people have been killed in a bomb blast in Yola, the capital of Adamawa State in Nigeria's northeast, where the militant group Boko Haram is active.
This is Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington.
A Highlanders football club bus bought with the aid of Zimbabwe Defence Industries Chairman Chinga Dube, who is also contesting a local parliamentary by-election in Bulawayo as a ZANU-PF candidate, is causing a stink in Makokova constituents and beyond. Some Highlanders supporters and political observers claim that Dube, who has donated varying amounts of money to the club over the years and has tried to become Makokova lawmaker for a long time, is allegedly trying to use the club's popularity to gain political mileage. One of the disgruntled city residents is Dumisani Mpofu of Cowdery Park, Sebab, who tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube it is surprising that even Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa will attend a ceremony to hand over the bus to the club executive tomorrow at Barberfield Stadium.
This is not a new thing. You remember when Jonathan was campaigning for Toronto for the first time, Highlanders once went there to play against AmaZulu, which is now no longer operating, functioning club. And by then, Highlanders was under the guidance of Ernest Mapepa. They went on to go to China, and I'm sure it was under the arrangement by ZANU-PF. So to me, it's not a surprise. It's an old thing. Only what is surprising me, I would have expected them to use the so-called the vice president from this part of the country. What is surprising me is their use of Mnangagwa. What then shows me that maybe within ZANU-PF, things are not very stable, which is now a concern. But for Highlanders to be used by ZANU, I'm not worried, because we saw it happen sometime around 2002, thereabout.
So does it mean that if somebody is using a certain, let's say, soccer team to campaign in elections, do you think that people vote as per what they get from that candidate whenever he uses their team?
No, I don't think it works. I think ZANU-PF depends on outdated simple policies of trying to move waters. It doesn't work. And all what it will do is to make the islanders lose supporters.
That was Codre Park resident Dumisani Mpofu speaking with Studio 7 from Zimbabwe's second largest city, Bulawayo. Mr. Mnangagwa is widely linked with the 1980s atrocities in Matabeleland and Midlands provinces by the North Korean-trained 5th Brigade, which left at least 20,000 people dead. He has never talked about this issue. Dave Tindlove, a ZANU-PF Central Committee member, says there is nothing wrong with having close relations between Highlanders and ZANU-PF.
Highlanders are the people. Highlanders is for the people. Tingatube is for the people. ZANU-PF is for the people. So there are similarities there. So how to distinguish that these are people for Highlanders and these are not for Highlanders? They are the same people. So those who support ZANU-PF in Highlanders will go and vote for ZANU-PF. Those who belong to other parties in Highlanders will not vote for Highlanders. So it makes no difference. Tsinga is delivering that bus on Saturday. There's no other time. So it's coincidental that the bus is being delivered at that very time.
And there are some other critics who are saying that why is it that the vice president who is going to present that bus is Mr. Mnangagwa and not Mr. Mpogo? They're saying because Mr. Mpogo comes from the region. What could be your comment to on that?
Vice President Mnangagwa is the national vice president and not the regional vice president, and so is Comrade Mpogo. Comrade Mpogo has been to all regions. He has been to Manicaland, Marsh East. Why did they not complain that Comrade Mpogo was going to all those other provinces? So that is a party program, and the party delegates presidents all areas, regardless of regions, because they don't represent regions. They are national leaders.
That was David Ntlove, ZANU-PF Central Committee member, speaking with Studio 7's Gives Dube from Mashingo.
Chitungwiza Residents Trust yesterday held an all-stakeholders dialogue meeting on access to information for area residents from Chitungwiza and Manyameru communities, local municipalities and businesses. The meeting, held at the Young Africa Skills Center, was convened in collaboration with the Zimbabwe chapter of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, MISA. It was designed to promote access to information and promote networking among residents. Chitungwiza Residents Trust Director Marvelous Kumalo tells Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo that the right to information includes schedules for water cut-off dates.
For instance, we have Chitungwiza Municipality, we have Chitungwiza Central Hospital, and a host of other service providers like ZESA and so forth. So the purpose of the meeting was to get first-hand information from key stakeholders that what are the challenges that are being faced by them in trying to access information of public interest.
And how relevant is this information?
This is very relevant because we have had instances where residents and the other stakeholders fail to access public interest information from service providers because they would have used ways that are not proper in terms of accessing the information. So we have had instances where stakeholders would be denied information, public interest information by service providers.
And what were the resolutions that came out of this meeting?
Yeah, the first key issue that came out was that Mr. Zimbabwe, working in collaboration with the Resident Trust, should organize some training workshops for our councillors and as well the municipality management so that they appreciate, and other service providers, so that they appreciate the importance of sharing information with the residents and key stakeholders.
Chitungwiza Residents Trust Director Marvelous Kumalo speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
And in our sports segment, the sudden resignation of FIFA President Joseph Sepp Blatter has had a strong impact on Zimbabwean football. Reporter Michael Kariati tells us why.
The future is uncertain for Blatter's associates, with pressure mounting for some of those alleged to be corrupt step down. FIFA President Kadde Dube is one of them, and the football family is unanimous in the agreement that the former Baimo Football Club owner has to do the honorable thing and follow the footsteps of the Swiss street soccer. Dube is a close ally of Blatter and openly declared his support for the Swede during the recent FIFA presidential election. Warriors supporter Andrew Rodzi said the FIFA board must also step down.
Cuthbert Duwe must go because if we can look back, he got a very strong bond with Mr. Seppi Blatter.
The Zimbabwean Football Association Supreme Board, the FIFA Council, is meeting next weekend to decide the fate of Duwe and FIFA Chief Executive Officer Jonathan Mashingaidze. Former Warriors striker Alois Fundjira, who in 1996 won the Zimbabwe League title with Cape United, expects the FIFA Council to make a board decision for these two.
Councillors have got the say. I think for now they need to have the courage, the strength to decide this is what we want.
Only 3 weeks ago, the FIFA Council met and resolved to put Duwe out of the association, but that decision was overturned by FIFA on the premise that the council not properly follow the constitution. With Blatter now out of the picture, football analyst Farai Kambamura said the current football leaders have overstayed the 53 Livingston Avenue.
A new crop of leaders. The ones that are there, they've been too long in the office, and by so doing, they've been abusing the office.
A FIFA Council extraordinary meeting could show but still the future of Duwe in Zimbabwean football. Both Duwe and Mashingaidze were not available for comment. In cricket, Zimbabwe cricket have lined up an exciting bumper program that will see 7 incoming international tours despite being 15 million in the red. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Well, we have music today, and we feature 24-year-old Bovas, who's one of Bulawayo's leading Zim dancehall artists.
I like your brown skin color, baby, I'm a Zimbabwean queen.
Bovas, whose real name is Emmanuel Majaya, started singing in 2010 when he was in Masingo, where he was born and bred. When he started out, he was doing urban grooves, but this changed when he relocated to Bulawayo in 2011 and met reggae music producer Center Party.
Wagwan people, this is Bovas from Bulawayo. I do dance. I've got some 3 albums, Daga Chitwa, Daga Kanganisa, and One of Feel a Dizzy.
Bovas has so far recorded 3 albums and numerous singles that include collaborations with other artists from all around the country. He has not restricted himself to working with Zim dancehall artists only, but has embraced other music genres. Some of his collaborations have been with hip-hop artists, who include one of the country's brightest prospects to penetrate the regional market, Calvin, who recently recorded a track with one of the top rappers in Africa, Casper Nyovest.
It's a dance routine. Mm-hmm. Ona takumberi, ta-ta-ta kumberi. O takumberi, ta-ta-ta kumberi.
Bovas records with Bulawayo-based Wisdom Records and reckons that being based in the country's second largest city has weighed down his chances of making it big, despite Zim dancehall currently being the in thing in local music.
If I was in Harare, I should be achieving more than those guys who are in Harare, because it is easier for them. If they release a track, they can go even the radio station to submit their music. So for me, it's hard because I need to have some money in my pocket to go to Harare.
Bovas sings mostly in Shona, but also includes Zimbabwe's 2 other major languages, English and Ndebele, in his productions. Zim dancehall has struck a chord with ghetto youths, especially in Harare, and has become popular in other Zimbabwean cities, including in Bulawayo, where South Africa-produced house music has all along been a fan favorite. Bovas and other Bulawayo-based Zim dancehall artists, however, still have a lot of groundwork to cover, as they still play second fiddle to their Harare counterparts, who have become household names in the last couple of years. We close the program with a track from Bovas, whose title is Vano Feel a Dizzy, which loosely translated means they feel dizzy, which is most probably directed at his competitors in the music industry.
Baby.
Reporting for Studio 7 in Bulawayo, I'm Joseph Njanji.
Baby, it's a dance of bullet. Ordinary dance, the Wisdom Records. Burn it up.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with experts and listeners about the fate of vendors in Zimbabwe's towns and cities as they are supposed to leave the streets by Sunday or face the wrath of the law.
And to join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Now to recap today's top stories.
First Lady Grace Mugabe's son, Russell Goreraza, has been found guilty of killing a pedestrian.
Deposed ZANU-PF Harare Provincial Chairman Jim Kunaka says he has not yet lost his property after it was attached by the deputy sheriff on Wednesday.
And political activists in the U.S. urge President Barack Obama's government to monitor the situation in Zimbabwe, saying their fears that the nation might degenerate into chaos.
That's our broadcast this evening. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And this is Dimiake Mwakalielia in Washington, wishing you a very, very pleasant weekend. Stand by for Studio 7 in the